Este. They will be presenting their threat plan as well as their preparedness for the coming local government elections. And would like to thank you for inviting the portfolio committee to the summit last week. It went very well, and they would like to thank you very much for that invitation. Could I then give the IEC to take us through their presentation? Commissioner would like to say something before the CEO comes in. Over to you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've been sent here by Dr. Brigadier Baum with three instructions. The first one was that I must apologize profusely for her not being here. She had a previous engagement abroad, and she really couldn't get out of that one. And also for the Deputy Chairperson, Commissioner Tokom Pumana. Then I'd just like to introduce the people here, Chairperson. My colleague, Terry Trelawney, is well known in very many circles, and it needs no introduction. Then we have on your right here, that's Mr. Stephen Langtree. He's the PA, or the chief of the CEO's office. He knows everything about everything in the commission. And then he's advocate Pancit Takula, also no introduction needed. And here is next one is Mr. Msutu Mwepa. He's the deputy CEO in charge of electoral operations. So anything that goes wrong, you can blame him in the election. Then Mr. Norman Duplessis, also well known in electoral circles for many years. He's the TCEO in charge of corporate services, Jefferson. The third thing that she told us to do is that my colleague here and me must make comprehensive introductory remarks about matters electoral and say profound things. And we are asking for your dispensation, Chairperson, to relieve us of that obligation, to the relief of everybody here. So, with that, Chairperson, if you do that, I'll hand over to Advocate Lakula.
I'll do that, Commissioner. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And honorable members, we are presenting our strategic plan for the year 2011-2012, which is the year starting on the 1st of April 2011. We have drafted this strategic plan in terms of the new framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans as directed by Treasury, and we developed this after a consultative period. Although we are presenting for 2011-12, this strategic plan covers a five-year period, and it includes an annual performance plan. And we have tried to the best of our ability to include in this plan strategic goals, measurable objectives in particular, performance indicators, and the targets of the Commission's process. The budget is also included in respect of the strategic goals, and this strategic plan will form the basis for our annual report, and we will be using this strategic plan also to submit quarterly reports to our executive authority. We have come up, Chairperson, with five strategic goals for this coming financial year, which are to promote principles of peaceful, free, and fair elections, to improve organizational efficiency and effectiveness, to manage free and fair elections, four, to foster public participation with a view to deepening democracy, and fifth, to support the core business of the Electoral Commission. And I will go through each strategic goal and the strategic objectives under each strategic goal. If you look at the first one, to promote principles of peaceful, free, and fair elections, the strategic objective there under is to promote the acceptance of and adherence to democratic electoral principles nationally. What is it that we are going to do within the borders of our country to ensure that there is acceptance and adherence to democratic electoral principles? We're going to do that by engaging a number of stakeholders on this issue. And the stakeholders in question are, we're going to have meetings, one meeting with the government, two meetings with relevant cabinet ministers, two meetings with Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, one meeting with each leader of political parties represented in Parliament, and one meeting with non-governmental organizations. If you look at what this translates to in terms of performance indicators for this financial year, the number of meetings that we're going to hold is six in this financial year, and we have indicated how, you know, the frequency at which we're going to hold those meetings per quarter, and the numbers are there. For this quarter, the coming quarter, which starts in April, we'll have one meeting, second quarter, two, third quarter, two, and the fourth quarter, two, with all the relevant stakeholders that I have indicated. The second objective under that strategic goal is to position the Electoral Commission as a continuously improving organization, and also to promote the acceptance of and adherence of democratic electoral principles internationally. And if you look at our objective statement in that regard, we'll do that by increasing our participation internationally, by engaging in two capacity building programs so that our colleagues can learn from others overseas, and we'll observe four elections, we'll undertake two study visits, we'll host two international delegations and attend at least one meeting of a regional or international member body, hold at least one briefing session for international observers, and one briefing session for domestic observers, and at least one briefing session for members of the diplomatic corps. And that's how we're going to interact with our international stakeholders. The total number of meetings that we're going to be holding is 14 for this coming financial year, divided into four for the first quarter, two for the second quarter, four for the third quarter, and four for the fourth quarter. And the justification for this objective is that we hope it will contribute to increasing the knowledge base and innovation in electoral democracy, and contribute to the creation of a climate conducive to free and fair elections. I will then proceed, Chairperson, to deal with strategic goal number two, which is to improve organizational efficiency and effectiveness, and the strategic objective thereunder is to, the first one is to review and improve implementation of and adherence to organizational policies and the achievement of strategic goals and objectives in the Electoral Commission. And how are we going to do that? We are going to do that by ensuring that the organization implements and adheres to all the organizational policies, and also implements the strategic objectives and goals fully. And that is why the target there is indicated as 100%, because we have to ensure full implementation and adherence to policies and strategic goals and objectives. And the justification for this objective is to contribute, it will contribute to decrease in non-compliance and increase efficiency gains. This is quite important in the light of our performance this past financial year. We will then proceed, Chairperson, to deal with our strategic goal number three, which is to manage free and fair elections. That's the strategic goal. And the strategic objectives, there are six of them. The first one is that we will provide accessible registration venues for voters to enable them to vote. And this objective as a whole its justification is that it will contribute towards ensuring that voters have improved and convenient access to their registration stations, which will allow them to exercise their right to vote in the election. For this coming financial year, we have set ourselves a target of 22,000 voting stations, and we will maintain that target throughout. And we are saying, as far as that strategic objective is concerned, that we want to ensure that the distance that our voters will walk to the voting station is less than or is equal to 7.5 kilometers for stations in the urban areas and 12.5 kilometers for voters in the rural areas. The next objective under that strategic goal of managing free and fair elections is to enable voters to register to vote. And here we want to ensure that voters are able to exercise their right to vote by ensuring that we have an up-to-date and accurate national voters' roll. And as we are required by Treasury, we have to put a target to say what is our target for the coming financial year. And our target is 22,999,273 persons or registered voters on our voters' roll. And this will be the target for this coming financial year. And we will try to maintain that target for all the four quarters of the year. This is quite a challenge because maintaining the target at that, taking into consideration that every month we have to remove deceased persons from the voters' roll, that means that that target sometimes is quite difficult to maintain it at the rate at which we have set it for ourselves. We are going to the strategic objective 3.3 under the one that the goal that I have mentioned, and it is to liaise and fund registered political parties. And in this regard, we want to maintain an accurate register of political parties and make sure that we maintain close relations with political parties. And the objective or justification for this objective is to contribute towards ensuring that political parties as key stakeholders in the electoral process are consulted during the electoral process. And what is the target? The target is 1,234 party liaison meetings at national, provincial, and municipal level, which means that for this coming year we'll hold 1,234 party liaison meetings with political parties at the three levels, and we have divided that figure into four to indicate the number of meetings that we'll hold per quarter. And also, we have indicated that we will ensure that the register of parties is available throughout the year on all working days in all the offices of the commission, and we also ensure that we register political parties within the time indicated in the law, which is 35 days. We then proceed to deal with the strategic objectives 3.4 under strategic goal number 3, which will be to comply with the election timetable for electoral events. And the justification for this is to ensure that the Commission successfully executes its responsibility in order to deliver free and fair elections in our country. And how are we going to do this? We will ensure that the voter's roll is certified on the date that is stipulated in the timetable. And that's why we have put 100% compliance as far as that is concerned. We will ensure that all contesting candidates comply with the law as well. There has to be 100% compliance with the candidates who contest an election. And we have to ensure that voting takes place within the date specified in the electoral timetable, which is 90 days. So we have to ensure that all elections, including by-elections that are going to be held in this coming financial year, are held within the prescribed 90 days. We will ensure that all the PRO, professional representation seats that are vacant, are filled within the 35 calendar days. And that is what the law prescribes, that whenever there is a PR seat that is vacant or that becomes vacant, that seat has to be filled within a period of 35 calendar days. We have put this here because we also have challenges as far as concerned, particularly because in by-elections where we find that the municipal managers at times do not inform us in time about a vacancy in council when it arises. So that is why we have put this here. And we also commit ourselves here to ensure that whenever we have an election, even if a by-election included, we will announce the results of that election within the 7 days period that is prescribed in the law. We will then, with your permission, Chairperson, proceed with strategic objective 3.5 under the same strategic goal, and that really talks about our operational issues that I don't have to go into too much detail about, which is to provide electoral material storage and distribution. And here we have to ensure that we have availability of a warehouse storage facilities at national and provincial level. We must have 10 storage facilities. We must have warehouses in each municipality. And we also have to ensure that we have one full-time national contract to support our electoral event. And that talks to all that. These are just issues really that pertain to also issues of warehouse and storage of material. We'll then proceed to 3.6, which is to secure and maintain local offices and venues for electoral events. And in this regard, we will provide and maintain offices and venues and equipment for our local offices to ensure the effectiveness and secure and equip a comprehensive network of voting stations to support the electoral event. And if you look at the number of municipalities, in each municipality we will have an office, and this will bring we'll have a total of 234 offices, which is one in each municipality. And regarding our voting stations, we have set ourselves a target of 20,868 voting stations throughout the country. And we have also committed to ourselves to ensuring that 60% of the voting stations that we use are schools. So we have dealt with that, which means that we will, out of the 22,000 voting stations that we have, 13,200 will be schools. I proceed to strategic goal number 4, which really talks about civic education and voter education, which is to foster public participation with the to foster public participation with a view to deepening democracy, and under this we have three strategic objectives, the number one being to inform and educate the public on democracy and electoral processes, and here we want to, the objective statement is to implement civic and democracy education program and reach in that regard 1.5 million people. And we have indicated in the slides that you see before you the number of interventions or events that we are going to hold, the annual target for 2012 being 3,314 events for civic and democracy education, and we have broken that into quarterly targets. And we also will ensure that we have 50 projects with strategic partners such as NGOs and so forth, and we will do, we'll reach that target in this coming financial year. And we've broken down that target also into quarterly targets, and we intend to produce and distribute 2 million educational materials in this coming financial year. And we have also distributed, or we have also indicated quarterly targets on how we're going to distribute and disseminate the 2 million per quarter. And the second one is talks to research that we're going to be conducting, and we're saying that we will conduct, because Chairperson, you have to bear with me. There's a lot of information that I'm trying to get through in a very short space of time. Wrong page, actually. Yes. Right. The second one is to position the Commission as the leading repository and generator of knowledge on electoral democracy. And the objective statement is to institutionalize research and knowledge management within the Commission, and we're doing that to strengthen the capacity of the Commission as a knowledge-based and research-driven leading organization. And how are we going to do that? Through the archiving of our materials, and we have set the target of how we're going to archive and preserve our records as the IEC. We're going to enhance our knowledge management, our knowledge center, which is a library, by making sure that we have relevant acquisitions both in hard copy and electronically, and we have set the number there. And we're going to design and implement implement our knowledge management strategy and system, and we will ensure that this knowledge management strategy is implemented, is developed and implemented throughout the quarter, and we are setting ourselves the target of piloting the implementation of the developed strategy in the third quarter of the coming financial year. And we will also ensure that we map knowledge management processes as best practice, and we also have given you what we are going to do in that regard. The next one, which is the last one, Chairperson, is strategic goal number 5, which is really a supportive function that the human resources, corporate services, performs, and it says that the strategic goal number 5 supports the core business of the Electoral Commission, and we're going to do that through 5 strategic objectives: by developing the human resources strategy and plan, providing adequate and competent human resources, develop, implement, and maintain the human resources training and skills development plan, provide an integrated support services, or provide integrated support services, provide timely funding of projects aligned with strategy, comply with the financial legislation, policies and procedures, develop and implement and maintain a supply chain management framework, develop an ICT strategy and plan, and maintain a stable ICT infrastructure. And if you look at the targets for 2012 regarding the first one, dealing with the development of the HR strategy and plan, we set ourselves the deadline of 31st March 2012 to ensure that that strategy and plan will have been developed and finalized for adoption at the end of the financial year. So you can see that while we are running elections, we will start also at the beginning of the financial year with a comprehensive development of our strategic, of our human resources strategy and plan. And we'll also, the second one being to provide adequate and competent human resources. What we intend to do there is to ensure that 90% of all the vacant posts are filled in the coming financial year. And we also ensure that we comply 100% with recruitment and payment plan and policies of the organization. And as far as the third one is concerned, being develop and implement and maintain the human resources and training skills and development plan, will ensure that we train our staff in line with and within the time frames and targets stipulated in the training and development plans and policies of staff in the organization. And in that regard, we have stipulated here the number of training interventions that we intend to have, the number of staff that we intend to train, and so forth. You see those numbers are high, and the only reason for that is that they include leisure staff. For this coming financial year, the elections will be held in the coming financial year. So that's why you see those numbers of high numbers of people that we are going to be to train. And the fourth one being to provide integrated support services. And here we want to develop, maintain, and implement an integrated support service framework to guide organizational support, security, and fleet management services. And you will see that I won't bore you because these things are really all of the nature that support nature. They provide support to the organization. And we will also make sure that all our projects are funded timely, and that we align the funding of those projects with our strategy. We will comply fully with all the financial legislation, policies, and procedures to ensure that we get an unqualified audit. That's the outcome that we are looking for there, and that we are setting for ourselves. And we'll also ensure that by 31st March 2012, we will begin the process of reviewing our supply chain management framework, and also make sure that we present it for adoption to the Commission within the time stipulated in the document. And we will also ensure that we develop our ICT strategy and plan. That's what we have to do. And this will be a 5-year ICT infrastructure strategy and plan, and we'll ensure that after it has developed, we review it annually and also maintain a stable ICT infrastructure to ensure that our infrastructure is 99% stable. That's our report on the strategic objective. It's a thick document. Chairperson, then I've tried to run through it as quickly as I could. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Honourable members, I'm not sure whether should we allow the CEO to continue with the presentation on the preparations for local government so that they could handle all the questions together because the time is against us. Could we do that? Do this? Okay, thank you. Sure. Because we still have a budget to go through. Could we maybe allow the budget presentation, and then we will, after the budget presentation, the CEO will come again with the local government preparation. Are we in agreement, honourable members? Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Duplessis.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm basically going to deal with the budget for the first year and the rest just summarising. The budget for the 11-12 financial year consists of an initial allocation from Treasury, a baseline allocation of 709 million, to which there's been some inflation adjustment, as well as an 80 million which has been allocated for special votes. We also calculated we will have a 17 million rand interest receivable, which would then give us a total budget as it stands of 816 million. I must say to you that this is the MTEF budget as submitted and as allocated. The fact of the matter is, however, that in the current financial year, we were given funding for both the two registration weekends as well as the electoral exercise, and we have ring-fenced in the current budget an amount of 469 million, which we will not spend in the current financial year, which we advised Treasury we would not spend, and which we would roll over to the next year so as to meet the electoral obligations that obviously now move from the year for which the election was budgeted to the year in which it actually would take place. And that would give us an operational budget, therefore, not of the 816 million as it appears in the MTF here, but in practice 1.2 billion. In the subsequent year, if we just look at the MTF period, the budget drops to 771 million because obviously there's not elections. And then in 2013-14, it increases again to 1.4 billion, which is the year where, once again, budget-wise, we provide for two registration weekends as well as an election. But exactly what has happened in this year, if the election takes place after 31 March, it would move on into the 2014-15 financial year. That is a high-level summary. At this point in time, the provision that has been made for special votes comes to 80 million. There are various scenarios in which one can calculate what amount of money one may need for that, depending on the response from the public. Whether you need one team or two teams or five teams to do home visits makes a fairly fundamental change. But we intend reaching agreement with Treasury that the additional funding that we may be needing in that respect be dealt with in the supplementary budget in November, and that it would then obviously be based on actual expenditure that we incur in the month of May, so that one don't, at this point in time where we don't know exactly what the response would be on special budget, you could get to an accurate calculation and then deal with it in the supplementary budget. But we still need to conclude our negotiations with Treasury. But at this point in time, there's not a basis for concern.
Okay. We don't have that document. I mean, we've got information on the budget elsewhere, but we don't have that specifically. And it would be nice to get it. And then, Chair, just before we move on, also through you to Advocate Lakula, the presentation that was made says Strategic Plan 2011-2012 to 2015-16. There is no information post 2012. Was there supposed to be? Thank you, Chair.
Can we hold on to your questions? Just know them until it's time for questions on the Volavma. Can you just note it? Okay.
Honorable Matsiba? Okay. I'm not sure whether I should do it. I thought we are first going to continue with the presentation on preparedness for local government, and then we will come up with questions after this. Are we in agreement? Can honorable members just note your questions, and then during question time you will come? Can we afford the CEO the opportunity to take us through the local government
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, honourable members. I will run through the document very quickly if we can. The preparations for local government elections, Stephen, we can go. Started really in earnest on an operational basis when the Municipal Demarcation Board presented the data set on the wards on the 1st of September 2010. You will notice, members, that Category A municipalities in terms of that set, which are metros, there will be 8 of them. This is an addition of 2. Category B municipalities will be 226. And Category C municipalities 44. There will be 4,277 wards for the local government elections, which is a 9.8% increase from the numbers of wards that we have currently. This will result in 4,555 different types of ballot papers that we will be using in these elections. If we look at what we have done since we received this ward from the Municipal Demarcation Board, we had gone into communities to review settlement patterns of communities, and we know that within 5 years lots of communities form and others move. And so we aligned our voting districts with the new settlement patterns, and once the MDB put their wards together, we went back to look at those voting districts which were split by the new ward boundaries and then aligned those to the Municipal Demarcation Board wards. We arrived at 20,867 voting districts, having consulted with parties, municipal party liaison committees at local level, in other words. We then undertook a targeted and communication registration weekend in just over 1,000 of our voting districts, which were affected by the split of voting districts by these wards, and we informed those communities that they have been affected by the process of demarcation and they needed to re-register. Where we did not find them at home, we left some communication, and in that process, we registered 38,622 new voters in those areas. We found 15,633 persons who were registered in those areas but just wanted to ensure that their registration details are correct. And 142,246 who were affected and registered in that process. Re-registered in that process, thanks, Lisa. We had 2 voter registration weekends, and that was planned, one for the 5th and 6th of February and another for the 5th and the 6th of March. And we continue to register voters at our offices until Proclamation Day. When one looks at the voters' roll in terms of where we are and where we have been, you will see that there has been a steady increase in the voters' roll. We do expect that the 2011 voters' roll will also show an increase overall in the numbers of figures that we had. As at the last registration weekend, we were just on 23,161,975 voters, but we are having to add to that number the new registrations that we have and remove any persons that may have been deceased in the period. This number will be updated tomorrow when we update or we release the numbers of the registration weekend. If we look at progress that we have made in terms of our voting station network, we have increased that again this year. It is 20,864 from where we were, and we believe that it will help with access to, you know, for communities to the voting stations. The registration of political parties going into this election, as at yesterday, we had 164 parties registered. Parties can register either nationally or at the municipal level, and 105 of those were registered nationally and 59 in municipalities. Applications continue to be received, and when I came here, we had 45 applications pending that we will deal with. Civic and democracy education, in brief, we really look at this in terms of before the registration and voting period. We look at that when people prepare to register, and then we do balloting education. And we work with a whole lot of stakeholders, and those stakeholders are put in the slide. We also do a lot of projects with our stakeholders, and we brief them as we did. The chairperson alluded to the briefing that took place last week, but we do a number of briefings with stakeholders, be they in the media, in trade unions, in farming communities, and everywhere. Stephen. Communication and awareness campaigns, there are a number of things that that we have done this year. We have worked very closely with media houses to train journalists covering elections and to ensure their understanding of the electoral process. Many of the journalists are new and therefore need to have or to be equipped with this information. We have worked with community, commercial, and public, the public broadcaster in terms of radio and television coverage. And I need to say that radio, of course, remains to be the biggest source of information in this nation, and we invest accordingly in terms of the budget that we have. Substantial amounts do go into radio, informing, advertising, but mainly also educational. We have had two new initiatives, Stephen, if you just go back to that one, two new initiatives that we have put into place, and partly these initiatives have helped us. We have put some information out on Twitter, which we manage a little bit, and it's there's the website there, or the Twitter side that we work on. It's Twitter /IEC Love Your SA, as well as on a Mobi site that we have created for these elections, which is Mobi .elections.org.za. We still maintain our toll-free number, our SMS facilities, the website. Those facilities we still maintain, and they have generated a significant amount of hits in this period. We are in a period where we know the election date has been announced, and we wait for proclamation. But once proclamation has been made, the commission will consult with party liaison committees on the election timetable a day after the election date would have been proclaimed. That election timetable will then be published in a gazette, and it will become available to everyone. In terms of election deposits for these elections, we've put a slide to see for each election type what the deposit was in 2006 and what the deposit would be in 2011. These figures have been published after consultations with political parties. We, as you know, Section 55 was amended to allow or to give effect for the holding of special votes, and we will we have been working at how we will be implementing those special votes. Stephen, let's go to. In terms of the new section, the Commission again has consulted with political parties and published the regulations concerning special votes, amongst others. And in terms of this regulation, the Commission will open and close for special votes application on dates and times to be included in the election timetable. The timetable will indicate the dates and times when home visits will be undertaken for those persons who would be visited at home, either because of their physical infirmity or disability. And we will also open the office of the presiding officer for those people who would not be able to come to the voting station on election day. These times will be included in the election timetable. In terms of looking at election staff, we are going to be recruiting approximately 200,000 election officials. Each one of them will be trained, and the training program has begun. It has been completed, and as we recruit these people, we train them, and then ensure that they are fit for election day. Criteria for the appointment of the staff has been agreed, and it's indicated there that presiding officers and deputy presiding officers must not, in the last 5 years, have held political office or been a candidate in an election or have been politically active for a political party. This was arrived at after extensive consultations with represented political parties. In terms of voter turnout, if one looks at these elections and compares them to the previous elections, all of the elections that we have managed since 1999, we have the turnout there, and the jury is out on the turnout for the 2011 municipal elections. Measures to ensure credibility, we will count at the voting stations immediately after voting has taken place, as we've always done. Party agents and observers will observe every aspect of the voting and counting process. Results systems will be audited and tested extensively, with parties allowed to second their information technology auditors to do this. We always invite political parties to come and test or try to see if they can hack or they find fault with the result systems way before the election date. And once they have done that, we then lock the system and we keep it and run it as we would run it on election day. This process will happen again this year, and the parties will have that opportunity. The the results will be audited, and the capturing of results will be audited, with auditors being present at every facility where we will be capturing results. This is also, it's a process that we have developed over years. We continue to perfect it and to make sure that it works for our democracy in the best possible way. Result slips will be scanned for the first time in municipal elections and be available online. In other words, once the results are published or are released, you would be able to, if you want to look at the original result slip, you'll be able to call that result slip if you go onto onto our website and pull that information. You will see it on your screen, and you can validate that information against the result that has been captured, and the two should be the same. Finally, the challenges, generally, this kind of elections, as you have seen in that slide I've indicated before, seem to attract lower voter turnout. This is despite, in this year's election, the biggest voters roll that would have ever as a nation. So that really remains an issue and a challenge. The second one is the disputed ward and municipal boundaries. There are a number of instances where, even through our registration processes, we have met with communities who have said they don't like these boundaries and so on and so forth. And that is a process, I'm afraid, that has been concluded, and we are just dealing with the remnants of the issues and dissatisfactions that there may be. The third one is the more complex logistical demands, and in this particular respect, I have indicated that we will have 4,555 different ballots. We have been in extensive negotiations, we still are, with the organizations representing persons living with disabilities, particularly the blind, and we've been looking at a template that they can use, similar to the template or better than the template that we use in national and provincial elections. We have advertised this tender before; it yielded no results, and the reason is pretty simply that the combination or numbers of unique ballot papers are just too many to be reproduced in the period of time that we have once we know each one of those ballots and on election day. We are engaging with the South African National Council for the Blind, DEFSA, which is the Deaf and Organization of South Africa, and others, to share with them what can be done. And we are told that they would be looking at this because we are out again on tender for the second time. And I'm afraid if this time we do not yield results, we may not have the template for elections. The last challenge really I want to share is parallel structures within parties. As you would know, parties would be requested to submit authorized representatives to deal with the submission of their lists. We are aware, and you would be aware, that there are instances where parallel structures within parties are making it extremely difficult for us to even attain that objective. I thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Moyepe. Honourable members, I think it's time for question time, and I think the first person should be Honourable Lovemore because of the issue that he has raised with regard to some slides that are not there. Could we afford you the time, Honourable Member?
Thank you very much, Chair, and I must say that I think I'm not alone in always being overawed at the massive task that the IEC manages to perform so excellently. Chair, yes, the strategic plan up to 2015 to 2016 is not included here, and so it would be interesting to know where that information is. There was also, Chair, a lot of detail that was given by Advocate Lakula during her presentation. For instance, meeting with stakeholders. The detail of who the stakeholders were was given during the presentation, but it's not included in the document. So I'm not sure if there is a document in which it is indeed included. Chair, I just wanted to question then some specifics on both documents, and I'm using this opportunity because it's something that's arisen in the constituency that I serve, and I think that it might be wider spread than just that constituency, so a quick answer would serve us well. San Jose River Valley Municipality I'm referring to, the IC office there is busy setting up a voting station at the prison because they say there was a national there was a court finding that there must be voting at prisons. That's for national elections, not local government. So it's something we have to put a stop to straight away. Chair, we focus very much on local government elections. But we do have national elections coming up, and that's particularly why I want to see why I'm interested in seeing the information up to 2015-2016. With respect to what's going to happen abroad, outside, well, not just abroad, but outside of South Africa, are people going to be able to register abroad? What are we doing about increasing accessibility to voting? Because that was a massive issue for people outside of South Africa for the next national provincial election. And then just with respect to electoral material storage and distribution, electronic voting comes up over and over. It certainly is something which could do away with the need for all the warehousing and transport, etc., of ballot papers. Is it something that is being seriously looked into? And Chair, my last question is just on it's just on the education. I know that the IEC has done over the years very good work with respect to the education, electoral education. But the electoral education does not include the power of one vote. It does not include telling voters that they can vote out a government with which they are dissatisfied, that that is their power. Certainly our view is that by doing that, you are strengthening accountability by public representatives to their communities, because they would understand that the communities have the power. You might even have fewer service delivery protests as a result of that strengthening of accountability, and you're certainly deepening democracy. But it's not unclear that I would just like comment on why and whether it is planned to be included in the future. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thank you, Jay. With regard to the strategic plan document on the second last page, there is a summary of budget in respect of strategic goals. I just want to know from you, I see that as far as the promotion of principles of peaceful, free and fair elections is concerned, in 2011-2012 and 2012-2013, the amount is more or less the same, but then it reduces with about 2 million in 2013-2014. Why is that? And then point three there, the management of free and fair elections. At the moment, it is clearly also for this local government election under the 40 million. But then in 2013-2014, and I understand that's the year of the national and provincial elections, and two branches of government are involved there, or two spheres, and only one in respect of municipal elections, obviously. But there's a huge, huge difference between those two amounts. Why exactly is that the case? And also, when you look at foster public participation with a view to deepen democracy, it is 62 million for 2011-2012, and then a much, much, much higher, 232 million in 2013-2014. Can you just explain that, please?
What do you see? I'm sure your team will help you here and there.
Yes, Chair. Thank you very much. I didn't get the question about the voting station in prison. Are you saying there is currently a voting station in one of the prisons? Chair, with your permission.
Chair, I must say I'm very much taking advantage of the opportunity. We can go other levels, but no, there is not a voting station in the prison. The IEC, however, in the Sunday River Valley Municipality is adamant that there was a court decision that prisoners must be able to vote, and we have been told that they will be establishing a voting station in the local prison, which of course is not so for local government elections. But my concern, and the reason why I'm bringing it up here, my concern is that it might not be isolated. It's something just perhaps to look out for. We'll certainly take it up within our provincial IEC structures. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, there is no voting. The law does not make provision for prisoners to vote in the local government elections, but for national and provincial elections, the prisoners do vote. And that's in terms of the constitutional court decision. But now there shouldn't be any voting station in any prison. And there shouldn't be, and if there is any activities taking place there, we will appreciate if you can give us the details there for us to be able to investigate. The Treasury has requested us to develop a strategic plan for 2015-16, and there is a comprehensive document that has all that with the targets for each year. It's quite bulky. Our understanding was that for this presentation, we requested to make a presentation for the financial year 11-12. But we do have the document, and we will send it to Mr. Edimatron, so the bulky documents that includes all the five-year cycle of Treasury. It has the targets, the strategic objectives and everything. We will forward that document to him electronically because it's quite bulky. Electronic voting, if you look at our there was a question of whether there's going to be voting abroad. Of course, there is a constitutional court case that was decided, the case in the run-up to 2009 election that made it possible for registered voters abroad to vote. That's what the court said, that those voters who were already registered could vote. Obviously, the law has to be brought in line with that decision, and there are certain issues that we still have to finalize, certain questions that are still hanging regarding registration of voters abroad for 2014. Are we going to conduct voter registration abroad, or are we going to apply the law as decided, or are we going to continue to apply the decision of the electoral court that only voters who are already registered should be allowed to vote? The jury is still out on that. I know that the DA raised this matter at the party liaison committee, and we agreed that we will park that issue and we will discuss it after the local government elections as we prepare for the 2014 elections. Electronic voting, if you look at our strategic objectives, we intend to undertake study tours. Two study tours, we also indicated to undertake to do some research, and part of that is geared towards looking at the whole issue of electronic voting as we move forward to look at best practices in other parts of the world and then take it from there. The question that you raised regarding the extent of our civic education is quite an interesting question. They're dealing with how far the mandate of the Electoral Commission stretches insofar as it relates to strengthening constitutional democracy. Is it our responsibility to inform the voters that if they are dissatisfied with a particular political party, they have the right to vote them out of office? Our view is that if we do that, we will be entering a very delicate political arena that is not our responsibility. We, in our civic education material, we do inform the voters about the importance of voting and why they should exercise their right to vote. But we believe, and that's our view as the Commission, that the minute we say to the voters, look, if you are dissatisfied with this party, please vote it out. We think that's a dedicated political platform that would rather leave to political parties. It's a battle that we don't want to enter in order to preserve our independence and impartiality that we guard so jealously. I think, Chairperson, with your permission, I will request Norman to respond to the questions. Then I can respond to them, but because we have a division of labor and everybody has to end their keep here, so everybody has to respond.
Thank you, Chair. I will with pleasure make available to you the document that we showed. Stephen, just keep that on the screen, please. The document which dealt with the adjustment of the budget for 11-12 outside of the MTF provision by ring-fencing an amount of money in the current year and rolling it over. The question of voter education. Treasury, a year ago, very specifically outside of the MTF process, came and gave us additional funding for continuous democracy education. They gave us a 20 million for the first year and then a 30 and a 30. And the drop in the third year there is when that allowance, if I can put it in inverted commas, runs out. But we will address it into the future, and with revisions of the MTF process, we will deal with that. The big difference, dealing with generally the question, the figures that you have there for 11-12 is not the real figures any longer. The rollover makes that 1.2 million, so that in effect what's in the first column and what is in the third column is much closer to each other now in reality, but I will make those documents available to you. The middle column, 2012-13, is a non-election period where there won't be a general registration weekend, and therefore generally the figures in that period would be lower. That deals with it in a general basis, but if there is something very specific, I'll gladly respond to. I have hard copies which I'll provide, and we'll also send you a soft copy.
Honourable Marcella, followed by Honourable Nisi.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, thanks to the IEC for a very well thought presentation and well presented document. Mine are very few, but it says that I'm going to be very practical on the current situation. In this weekend, there was a registration, and the DA raised concerns about the possible registration rigging, which the rigging was allegedly in Midvan. So I would like to know, to what extent is that possible, and what could have happened, or what is the possible solution should that be the case? The other issue is around the registration on the first and obviously the last weekend, the second weekend, which is the last one that we had this weekend. How many, or what is the percentage in terms of the totals of the youth between the ages 18 and 31, and possibly 31 and 36, or even if you look at the whole, that's 18 to 36 of the total population that is registered. The other question, Chairperson, is you have seen that there are areas where there were floods, and I didn't hear much from the IEC on that, saying to what extent are we going to be able to address those areas, given, of course, the fact that the registration was on the set date that we had the registration. I heard that the chairperson of the IEC, Dr. Bam, addressing this, but it was at the time where we still had another registration to take place. Now, to what extent has that been addressed, a challenge? The last question is the intra-party conflict and the possible action to try and avert the problems where possible. What is it that the IEC thinks is proper and just in their way of operations? I mean, the reality here is that the elections are set for the 18th of May. That is the reality. Now, if the elections are on that day and parties are still fighting in terms of who should be responsible to submit the list of candidates, or they still contest, or they still, you know, loud wide fires burning on the streets, violence and all sorts of things, and you have to conduct a ward election and the ward is up in arms saying that we're not voting. What are you going to do in that kind of situation? I'm looking at the worst case scenario now. I'm aware that it might be different at that stage, but what if we have the worst of them all? Thank you, sir.
Honorable Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to welcome the presentation from the Commission. I've been partly covered by my colleagues here about the natural disaster, because I wanted to know if there are any plans in place to such natural disasters like floods and so on. Are there any plans that are provided? My second question is, how is the Commission going to make sure that there is adequate and competent electoral staff My last question is that, do you have any plan in place as to how are you going to intensify communication with relevant stakeholders on electoral democracy? Thank you very much for the time.
I will love more. And let us be mindful of the time, followed by Honorable Hasibone.
Thank you, Chair. I think I can predict the answer to my question, but I'd like to ask it anyway. We attended last week, Chair, the Local Government Election Summit in at the Sandton Convention Centre. And as you know, there was a very interesting presentation by a Kenyan gentleman, and I do not recall his name at the moment. He's been substantially interviewed on television, which has been very interesting. And I understand that he's here to advise the IEC or to consult with the IEC. This is what has come across on television. But what he put across were warning signs with respect to violence, election violence, in that case post-election violence. Many of those warning signs seem to exist in South Africa at the moment, or else we're heading that way. My question on the basis of that is, does the IEC consult not just the public in educating them how to vote, but consult with government, perhaps with the presidency, on aspects of the governance environment in this country which could affect a free and fair election? I think we all accept that the IEC does everything it can. But if it is identifying things within governance that can affect a free and fair election, does it in fact tell government about those? Thank you, Chair.
Thank
you, Chairperson. During almost every election, we hear how farm workers were denied to go and vote. What I wanted to find out is if the IEC has perhaps any plans in place to perhaps negotiate with the farm owners to allow them to go and vote, and are there any plans in place again to also deal with those farm owners that are not going to comply? My other question is with regard to the education material that will be distributed. Is it going to be user-friendly for those that cannot read and write? Thank you.
Over to the Commission.
The person that spoke there is not here to be an advisor to the IEC on any matter. It was just a person, an interesting person, that was invited to do the speech or to do the presentation at that moment. And it was really a very, very interesting presentation. But it doesn't affect our, it's not applicable to our situation. And we are not being advised by him on what we should do to prevent post-election violence or anything like that. So it was an interesting thing, and as I said, he didn't come here to advise us. He went back that evening again.
Okay, the question was, does the IEC advise the government when they see triggers, possible triggers for post-election violence or for election violence?
I'm sure the Commissioner was responding to your question with regard to the keynote, speaker who was there, Mr. Gitongo, if I'm not mistaken. That's why he was responding. Am I right, Commissioner?
Right, Chairperson, yeah.
Honorable Commissioner Zelane.
Two issues. On the first question, the question that you are making a follow-up on, of course, we consult with the leadership of all the political parties, about the environment within which the elections have got to take place. So as part of that, we would also consult with the ruling party leadership. But apart from that, we liaise on regular basis with various government departments, including the security cluster. So if there are difficulties and issues that we think may be able to affect the environment within which the elections are going to take place, those issues are dealt with in that interaction that we'd have with the responsible ministers. On the issue that was raised in relation to intra-party conflict and our responsibility there, it's a very tricky one. But we're moving from an understanding, as I see, that the electoral process is a joint responsibility. And as part of that, we urge particularly the political parties to play a much more meaningful role in terms of creating that environment within which we can be able to perform our responsibilities. We would obviously appreciate if the political parties can actually be able to give us the names and people who will be authorized to submit at all levels their list. And also as an organization, we are not really empowered to deal with the issues that affect various political parties. So those are the issues that must be dealt with by the political parties themselves, and hopefully they'll be able to address all those issues so that by the time we come to the submission of the list and any other process relating to our timetable, that we will not be having any impact of the intra-party conflict in our processes as a commission.
Honorable CEO.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. The Midval situation, fortunately I have first-hand information of Midval because I was there on Sunday. And we had a meeting with both the DA and the ANC. And the DA has submitted what they call objections against the registration of some voters. Obviously, there are requirements that have to be complied with. An objection has to be submitted to the commission in proper form or in prescribed form. And the form in which the DA submitted the objection to the commission was not the one that is prescribed in the law. So the commission has written to the DA to say that please ensure that you submit your objection in the form prescribed in the law. But on our side as well, at an administrative level, we are also looking at investigating some of the complaints that the DA has made to us about the allegations of fraudulent registration. So that is ongoing. It's a matter that we will have to attend to urgently before the voters is certified. Second weekend registration, we have preliminary figures for young people between the ages of 16 and 29 because we are going to be releasing the figures tomorrow, actually. And the preliminary figures are that 80% of young people between the ages of 16 and 29 registered, I think, on the 5th and 6th of March. Mosotho Chairperson will respond to the question regarding the flooded areas and the plans that we have put in place for natural disasters. And then I'll ask Norman to talk about what is it that we're going to do to ensure that our electoral staff is competent. Stakeholder engagement is something that we are busy with. As you know, we had the summit, we had a meeting with Chapter 9 institutions, we have meetings lined up with NGOs, with the disability sector, with trade unions, with women. So that's ongoing. And we're going to try and cover all these groups before the elections. But I also have to say that we have continuous engagement with these people, even when we don't have elections. And the budget that we have for civic and democracy education, we use it towards this constant engagement with our stakeholders. Farm workers, even that one, actually, before each election, we sign a memorandum of understanding with farm workers and farmers precisely to address the issues that were raised by Honorable Khasibuni to ensure that the farmers enable the farm workers to exercise their right to vote. And we are going to have, and usually that memorandum of understanding is signed at a public event, and we are in the process of organizing that event, and God willing, we want to hold this event at a farm so that we sign the MOU with the farmers at a farm, and we're in the process of identifying that farm. Election material, yes, we're going to have it in simple language and also translated into all official languages, including the NAM, which is NAM, which is the language of the indigenous people in the Northern Cape. Thank you.
Dr. Mwepe.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question on what are we going to do to communities affected by disaster, we fortunately have less than 12 of those communities. We have agreed that before tomorrow, or by the end of, by the close of business tomorrow, all of those communities must be visited in one way or the other, and registered, even if it means we loud hail and, you know, inform those communities that we have come. We will do so having consulted party liaison committees operating in the area. And we do so because we don't have much time left. Proclamation is imminent, but we do want to have those communities assisted in the best possible way we can.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the issue of competent electoral staff is probably one of the most complex ones to resolve, purely and simply because you are talking about 200,000 people that work for you for a single day, and one would want them to understand law, all of them correct, interpret law correctly, to take the same decisions and the same answers whether you are at a voting station in Western Cape or in a voting station in Limpopo, and that is obviously a mammoth undertaking. And I think I need to say here that the demand or the urge from local communities to have young unemployed people be given an opportunity to be part of this process obviously is a factor that also impacts on this. The measures that we've taken is we have been pretty stringent on the requirements as far as the appointment of presiding officer are concerned, the person in charge. They need to be experienced people, they need to be people that have a little bit of wisdom, that can deal with people and difficult people at times. We also submit those names to party liaison committees for sign-off, not only for impartiality, but also competence obviously comes into the picture. The second element is that and Treasury specifically gave us funding to extend our training. Instead of having it on one day, we actually start with training for presiding officers. We started 6 months ago, where we have a course and then a second course and a third course before we actually get to the first registration weekend, to try and just get a little bit of a larger degree of solidity into that. But that also brings one, perhaps this is an appropriate forum, to say that the role that agents of political parties play in this process to ensure that correct interpretation of law and even-handed treatment across the board is fundamental. The more active parties are in the electoral process, the closer we are going to get to the result that we actually desire in terms of this consistency and objectivity. Thank you, Jack.
Yeah, thank you, the IEC. We thank you for your time coming here to make your presentation. Honorable members, I'm sure we will have a continuous time to engage with our entities. But because of time today, we are going to end here with the IEC and afford the opportunity to film and publication. And I truly apologize, CEO, that we are giving you so much little time. But in future, I'm sure you will be the first to make your presentation, and the IEC will be the last this time. No, could we then give the film and publication time to make their presentation? And the IEC, you are welcome to leave if you so wish, but without disturbing the proceedings.